Part 13. The Wolf. Chapter 26. Lulu wakes in the dark, sitting with his back to the rocks. The fire is nothing but embers and ash. He checks his watch, still a couple of hours before sunrise. He has slept fitfully, but not just because of the cold and his awkward position. He has dreamed again. For Lulu, dreams are a dangerous territory. In dreams, the past is not the past. The terrors of his childhood in the residential school still plague him. A lifetime of trespass haunts him. Nameless faces loom before him. The voices of dead men speak. In dreams, Lulu sees things he cannot explain. In the dream that awakened him, he saw a man in the clearing of a forest transform into a huge beast and begin a battle with another beast that was its twin. In this dream, he not only stood watching the battle, he was the transformed man, and he was deep in the fight, claws ripping, teeth gnashing. Even when he wakes, the fury of the dream still unsettles him. His dreams have sometimes proven to be premonitions. Once, in a dream that came to him while he was working under Kimball as a private military contractor hired by the government to help secure the diamond district of Sierra Leone, he saw a swarm of ants engulf a hyena and devour it, only to be swallowed themselves by another hyena. The next day, he was scheduled to be part of a team assigned to help with the search of a village suspected of harboring RUF insurgents. The dream had greatly disturbed him, and he found an excuse to be released from the mission. The team, when it entered the village, was set upon by the villagers en masse and suffered devastating casualties. Lulu, along with Kimball, was part of the large force sent the following day to secure the area. When they'd finished their mission, not one villager was left alive nor any building left standing. He makes no excuses for his past, but in his sleep he has no control over his conscience, and his dreams sometimes punish him. He rises and steps away from the rocks to relieve himself. As he stands pissing onto the snow, he gazes up at the stars. He has read that the Dakota people believe stars reside in the branches of cottonwood trees, and when the spirits of the night sky require more, they shake the stars loose with a fierce wind. He has looked at the inside of a cottonwood branch and has seen the star there. The part of him shaped by his urban upbringing in the residential school tells him what nonsense it all is. But there is a deeper part of him that is more than willing to embrace the beauty of the story. "God damn this night," Kimball says from behind him. "Can't sleep, can't go after them. And since you killed our communications, we've got no idea what's going on out there. We're blind." When Lulu has finished his business and turns, he sees the other man adding sticks to the embers and blowing flames to life. "They're not far from us," Lulu says. "We'll catch them soon after it's light."
"You said we'd catch them yesterday."
"Fate intervened. And who can control fate?"
"What if something intervenes today?"
"The sky's clear. And can't you feel that south wind? The day's already warming. By mid-morning, all the snow will be gone. Nothing to stop us today."
"I'll believe that when we have Dolores Morisseau in hand."
"You can have the woman," Lulu says. "I want the old man."
"Outfoxed you yesterday. Got under your skin, did he?"
"Let's just say he intrigues me."
Kimball settles back as flames grow in the fire. "Got any of that jerky left?"
"We ate it all last night."
This is a lie, but Lulu has no intention of further depleting his supply. Despite the reassurances he's given Kimball, he's not certain of the day's outcome.
The wily old man they're tracking may have more tricks up his sleeve.
The hunt has already gone on far longer than any of them anticipated. It could go on even longer. In a way, Lulu hopes that it does. He's eager for the challenge.
"Remember the job in Colombia?" Kimball says. "When we took down that operation, you didn't want any of the drugs we found. You could have made a fortune. A lot of the guys did. You were just satisfied that you tracked down those cokeheads. That was your real payoff. It was you against the jungle then. This time around, it's you against this wilderness and that goddamned old man."
"You see everything as a fight, Kimball. It's not that way. I'm not fighting this wilderness, and I'm not fighting the old man."
"No? What then?"
"Think of it as a dance, and I'm trying to hear the music."
"You like music, do you? Well, here's a little ditty for you. If we lose the Morso woman, we could be history, you and me. And I don't just mean we'll never work together again. I mean the people that hired us may decide to cancel our futures. And believe me, nobody will ever find our bodies."
"You always did have a penchant for melodrama, Kimball."
"I'm not the one who smashed our sat phones against the rocks."
"And I'm not the one who neglected the recon that would have told us who we're up against out here."
"Hell, he's not a ghost or a monster."
"I don't know what he is."
Lulu looks at the sky and sees the first faint suggestion of daylight.
"But I intend to find out soon."
They've gone less than a mile north when Lulu stops, turns around, and starts back in the direction from which they've just come.
"What the hell are you doing?" Kimball says. "We've lost them."
"You said you'd find them."
"I will, but not by going in this direction. They turned off somewhere."
"Where?"
"I have an idea."
"Christ, I should never have trusted you, you and your damn instincts."
"This old man, whoever he is, knows these woods. I've just been following him. It's time I began to anticipate. Come on, double time."
Lulu breaks into a trot heading south, following the tracks he and Kimball have just made. The sun has risen, and the day is warming rapidly. The snow is becoming slush under their boot soles. They pass the rocks where they spent the night. A quarter mile farther, they come to a stream bed that was dry the day before. Now a rivulet of snowmelt is already threading its way among the rocks. The creek bed runs east and west. Lulu pauses a moment, considering.
"Which way?"
"West," Kimball says. "A few miles west then south, and they'll walk right into Aurora."
"A white man's thinking. East and south is the reservation. We go east."
It's a few hundred yards before Lulu finds the tracks. They lead from a deadfall of trees and branches. He can see the bare area over the top where a blanket had been laid to keep out the snow. A far better place to have weathered the storm than in the lee of some rocks. Did the old man know it was there? Is he just lucky, or is something else at work, something Kimball would call superstitious mumbo-jumbo?
"He hears the music," Lulu says, mostly to himself.
"What?"
"Never mind. We need to keep moving fast."
The tracks, while Lulu follows them, grow more and more shallow as the snow that holds them melts away. The two men come to a ridge running north and south. What's left of the snow clearly shows that the old man and the woman have turned north.
"Heading into the damn wilderness again?" Kimball complains.
Lulu takes the topo map from a pocket inside his jacket and studies the terrain.
"There's a series of three ridges ahead of us. He's gone north to get around this one, but he'll head south along one of the troughs between the ridges. If we cut due east now over this ridge, we'll intercept them
or the trail they've left on the other side. If not there, then on the other side of the next ridge. They'll still have a good 10 miles of hard walking before they hit Alouette, the res town. We'll have them in hand before that.
Kimball lies, the slope of the ridge slick with snow slush. Looks like a broken ankle just waiting to happen.
After you, Lulu says.